Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 44 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're going to be talking about something very special, American pain, especially American women's pain, oh boy, and what that really means. Are we taking drugs to numb it all out? Well, before we hop into that, I just want to make certain that you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, please run on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder, hop on over to iTunes after the episode and rate this podcast and review us because we love to hear your feedback. Yeah, that's right. I actually read these things. So please take a moment and do that. All right, it's time now for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Ah, American pain. What's that all about? We have a fabulous guest, an expert, to be able to help us kind of understand what this whole phenomenon's all about. Dr. Reef Karim, or Dr. Reef, as he loves to be referred to, is our expert for this topic. He's a double board certified psychiatrist, addiction medicine physician, and relationship therapist. With expertise in human behavior, Dr. Reef is the founder and director of Lumion Center in Beverly Hills, a day treatment center specializing in mental health, addictions, toxic relationships, and personal development. He's also assistant clinical professor at the UCLA Semmel Institute for Neuroscience and the host of a new online show, Reef Madness. Hey, listen, Reef, I'm from Berkeley. Yeah, I get real close to saying reefer, so I got to be real cool about that. No question, every time I see that. Well, you're a comedic, smart, topical news show host, and so you get that totally. So there you go. And you can be seen also at drreef.com. Hey, Reef, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, what is this American pain you're talking about?
Well, you know, we all know about the term pain. And when we think about pain, we think about it in reference to physical ailments. You know, you got a back problem, your leg hurts, your shoulder hurts, your arm hurts. We think of pain in regards to physical manifestations. We rarely think of pain in regards to emotional or mental health and somebody being in emotional pain. So when we look at the U.S., we look at America, and one of the reasons that you know, I have a talk on American pain, is because we consume 80% of the world's supply of prescription painkillers, pain medication.
Ouch, 80%?
Yeah. And women more and more. So there's a gender specificity in regards to the numbers increasing is much higher in women. So we have
Why?
To look at that.
What's going on with the woman thing?
Well, you know, some women will tell me, well, it's because we have to deal with men. But
I'm not going there.
Yeah, don't even. I'm opening up Pandora's box there, but don't do it. But there's many, many reasons. First off, we as a society, our technology has far and away passed our emotional resilience, our ability to handle the stressors associated with tech. And a thing that I talk about a lot in my talks and, you know, videos and what I'm doing in regards to thought leadership is our desperate need for validation. We have this sense of needing to record and put up our 15 minutes of fame so that we get validated. And it gets to the point where we get overwhelmed and distracted. And we're seeing higher numbers of people that have increased levels of stress, increased levels of loneliness, lack of fulfillment, lost, searching, no idea what their identity is. They're vacant. And they're not unhealthy per se in regards to do they have a psychiatric diagnosis or do they have a physical diagnosis. They're unhealthy in regards to meaning and deeper spiritual. There's a spiritual void in them. And, you know, I own a treatment center that people are coming to more and more with this feeling of just feeling empty inside and not having any substance or not being filled with anything of meaning. So I think that's a big piece of it. But I also think if you look at pain medication, you know, when we look at prescription drugs that are abused, we look at stimulants like the Adderalls and the Ritalins and the Dexedrines. And in women, we find, you know, those are often used for weight loss for non-medical reasons. Like they'll get, you know, some people will get them from medicine cabinets or get them from their doctors because they'll claim to have ADHD, but they really don't, but they're using it for weight loss. Then you've got sedative hypnotics like Valium, Ativan, Xanax, you know, medications like that that are used more for either anxiety or sleep. And then you've got prescription narcotics, which are the OxyContins, the Vicodins, the Lortabs, the Percocets, and more like them. And those activate opiate receptor-mediated activity. So they enhance our opiate system. And our opiate system is not only a physical pain reliever, our opiate system is also an anxiety or emotional pain reliever. So when we're looking at people that are abusing these meds, we just automatically think, oh, well, they're in physical pain. No, a lot of them are in emotional pain. And they're getting a high from the drug, or they're getting a relief by using the drug of their emotional pain. And they never even thought about that. And they'll go see multiple medical doctors, or they'll be getting pills from Canada or Mexico or online, or and they'll never get to the root cause of the problem. And before you know it, they either have an addiction or they have a psychological dependence on the pills, where they can't live life without the pills. And it's really a problem.
Well, you know, when it comes to women, as you're well aware, women tend to suffer generalized anxiety disorder at almost 20 times the rate of a man. They just tend to be, you know, we're kind of hardwired for anxiety for a lot of reasons evolutionarily. And because of that, the anti-anxiolytics that you already mentioned are widely used by women. And it seemed almost like it's okay. I mean, we're not talking about the Valley of the Dolls here, but we're talking about, you know, if I need a little bit of Valium, hey, whatever. If I, you know, need something like Xanax to get me to sleep at nighttime, whatever. Whereas in the past, it was really seen as now, wait a minute now, you know, we're using drugs here. Now, do you get a feeling that there's greater acceptance about this, almost to the point of, you know, being almost funny? It's sort of like, oh, wow, what are you on? Well, I'm on, you know, that type of thing. What do you think?
Well, I think there was a higher acceptance of taking external substances to change your internal self, which is what I call it. You know, a few years ago, maybe over the last 10, 15 years, I think there's a backlash now against pills because we have such an anti-pill movement right now because so many people don't like pharmaceutical companies or companies that are direct-to-consumer marketing and causing a lot of causing a lot of problems in regards to all these pills, because we have this instant gratification society and we want a pill to solve all of our problems. But I do think women tend to rely more. They have almost double levels of diagnosable depression than men. They have higher generalized anxiety disorder. They have higher panic. There's certain conditions or disorders that women have much more significant numbers in regards to epidemiology. Now, guys might have more of certain other disorders, but in this case, with pills, yeah, I think it was very common. You know, my treatment center is in Beverly Hills, and it's very common for people here in Santa Monica or Beverly Hills to have a bottle of Xanax in their purse, and it's like, oh my God, I had the roughest day. I think I'm just going to pop a Xanax and make all their problems go away. The problems don't go away. Your response to the problems are delayed. And and fixed for momentarily. But the real way to handle it is to meet your problems head on, develop some resilience, build some skills, and then you're better equipped down the road to handle whatever problems come your way because you're better armed for it. When you're not armed and you're relying on an external substance to deal with life, you're going to continue to rely on that substance to deal with life. And the threshold of what it takes to pop that substance might become lower and lower and lower, where initially it was like, okay, if I've got a totally chaotic moment that's like 9 out of 10, I'm going to take an Ativan or a Xanax or a Valium or even a pain med like a Vicodin. But that slowly becomes an 8 or a 7 or a 6 or a 5. And I see so many people that are like, listen, I pop Xanax 3 times a day and I can't live without it. It's like it's my safety net. And that's very sad to me. It's very sad how people are trying to numb out their life with prescription pills.
Do these become gateway drugs to other things?
You know, I never really liked the gateway drug phenomenon where people talk about, oh my God, if you smoke weed or if you pop a Vicodin, you're going to start shooting heroin in a year. I don't buy that whole thing. I think there's some people that are hardwired and genetically vulnerable to have some kind of a substance use disorder or a behavioral use disorder. And I think those people with enough exposure and intensity in regards to their delivery system, maybe they start out orally, then they start smoking a substance or snorting it, and then before you know it, they're graduating up the delivery system. Yes, those people, I do feel like just introducing anything to their ventral tegmentum, nucleus accumbens, their reward circuitry in their brain, and getting this dopaminergic rush and a rush of other neurotransmitters, to those people, I do think just an introduction of a substance externally can potentially cause them to use their drug of choice, to turn to it at some point, or to abuse something else, or to abuse the drug they're on in higher numbers. But I think for the vast majority of people, they pop a Xanax, and they're popping a Xanax, and they don't really deviate from that. But I do think it's a problem because they're popping a drug to deal with their problems instead of dealing with their problems.
So at the Lumion Center in Beverly Hills, where you are founder and director, so walk me through this. I'm going to come through the front door, right? And I'm stressed out. I'm, you know, someone who is who's got an executive job. I've got a lot of, you know, challenges and pressures and burdens, both personally and professionally. I find myself now relying upon Xanax to be able to get to sleep at nighttime. I'm taking Valium on and off throughout the day. When I have aches and pains, I might also be using some form of opiate. And next thing you know, I'm kind of floating through the day. I'm really feeling empty now. And despite the fact that I make a lot of money, relatively speaking, I just don't feel like I have any kind of real meaning and focus, and I feel pretty empty. So I come stumbling through your front door seeking help. Walk me through how you do it.
Well, what I'm a big believer in that our bodies and our minds know when there's dysfunction. And when we're feeling lost, when we're bored, when we don't know what we're doing, when we're on autopilot in life and we're just kind of getting by, but we're just not feeling life the way that we would like, we know it. And our bodies know it and our minds know it. And we either deal with it for an extended period of time or we use pills to numb out. But eventually, to use the AA phrase, we get sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we want to do something about it. Now, some people will go to their clergy, some will go to friends, some will go to hardcore inpatient centers, and some will go to day treatment or outpatient centers like Lumion. Now, what we do here is we have a whole series of practitioners, of doctors, of clinicians, of holistic providers, of neuropsychological testing, of pharmacogenetics, of brain imaging sometimes, where somebody comes in and in the first phase is usually some type of crisis. And so that crisis, when we think of crisis, we're like, oh my God, somebody's like losing their mind or somebody's, you know, popping a bunch of pills. No, crisis could just simply be an existential crisis. It could be a toxic relationship crisis, or it could be in a drug problem or a mental health problem, or, you know, a meaning problem, as I mentioned, like in a spiritual way. They're not themselves, and they're lost. Now, some of those people are, like you mentioned in this example, are relying on pills to get by or to deal with life, but they know that that's not going to work for them long term. So they come in with some type of crisis, and we do emotional detective work. Our job is to figure out, how did this crisis develop? What conditioning or habituation do you have in your life that brought you to be who you are today, and develop this decision-making strategy that you have today? And that requires some testing. We do psychological testing, neuropsych testing, as I mentioned, the pharmacogenetics, a really strong psychiatric examination. If somebody's relying on substances, a really strong addiction comprehensive examination. Sometimes we do brain imaging. Sometimes we do a bunch of other stuff. We get to a sense of what is going on and how did that person develop who they are. Then we focus on moving them out of that crisis by either, it could be intensive therapy, it could be medication management, it could be an intensive holistic program with acupuncture, Chinese medicine, yogic therapy, yoga nidra, spiritual therapy, existential work, Reiki. It could be a whole bunch of different things. Cognitive behavioral, dialectical behavioral, and it can also be meds sometimes if they need medication. But, you know, my motto is, a good doctor knows when not to prescribe.
I wish I heard that more often.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I'm getting out there more and more promoting that. It's been my tagline for years and years and years, and I'm now putting it out there more and more. Because here's the reality. When you're a physician, you've done a lot of hard work. You've gone to medical school. You've been tortured in your internship. And, you know, I was working 110 hours a week, sleeping at the hospital, getting paged all night. It's rough. It's not easy. And when you get out, you have the power of the prescription pad. And a lot of doctors, you know, they rely way too much on the power of their prescription pad, but it's what they know. And they've been tortured for years and years and years in training, you know, spending 10, 12 years sometimes in training, making $0 or maybe $30,000 as a physician, paying off $150,000, $200,000 in loans. So they know what they know. And some doctors will far and away learn as much as they possibly can, not only about pharmacology, or in this case, psychopharmacology. They'll learn about all sorts of other aspects and non-medication based ways of healing. But there are other doctors that don't. And it's easy to prescribe a medication. You have a license. All you need to go to your prescription pad and say, I am going to solve your healing. I'm going to solve your pain. I'm going to heal you. I'm going to give you this medication. It's going to take away your pain. Isn't that amazing? And the patient's going to love that doctor, and they're going to have a great potential connection or doctor-patient relationship or transference relationship because the pain is being taken away. However, long-term, what is that doctor doing for that patient by taking that pain away? And in this case, I'm not talking about chronic pain, you know, or like some serious injury. I'm talking about emotional pain. That doctor, if they give them a Xanax or a Vicodin or an OxyContin, is masking their underlying problem with some type of pain medication. And so if that person was actually getting better care and not just the opiate Band-Aid that they're getting, then the doctor would be able to say, listen, I know what's going on. This is stemming from your divorce. And this is stemming from the amount of pain and grieving that you still need to do and take care of in regards to the loss, the empty nest and the loss of the divorce and the fact that you don't know what you're doing in life now and some of the toxic abuse you took and blah, blah, blah. And we'll hook them up with the right types of people that know when to prescribe, when not to prescribe, and what types of therapy to do or what types of procedures to do to help that individual along. That's good medicine. Just throwing pills at people is not good medicine.
I think that that's perfect. And, you know, I wish more people, more practitioners really approached it this way in a big way, it's just so much easier to take the power of the pad, the prescription pad in this case, and just to get them out the front door, because it involves so much. Also, I think that our medical care system, the way it's set up, is not set up well. So that 5-minute interlude that you have with a practitioner doesn't even begin to touch what that individual actually needs, but is just enough time to write a prescription. You know, I would advocate, and I have continuously done this in public policy and otherwise, for a brand new system that really sets up an environment that the individual walks into that is conducive to a brand new form of healing and not just, you know, a handoff with a prescription. And that really sounds like what you're doing. Am I correct, Reef?
We have a very unique system here at Lumeon. When we have rounds, we may be discussing a patient and looking at them from a mind-body perspective. We may have a psychopharmacologist, a cognitive behavioral therapist, an existential psychologist, an acupuncturist, a Chinese medicine doctor, and the individual therapist or an addiction doc, all sitting in a circle talking about that individual from their different perspectives. And let's say that person is on a bunch of Xanax and they've been switched over to Klonopin, which is a longer acting drug where you don't have as much of the highs and lows because Xanax is so short acting. And the acupuncturist is working on, say, an auricular technique or is working on decreasing craving for the medication or decreasing impulsivity and helping promote impulse control or decreasing anxiety. And then the Chinese medicine doc is working with the patient on finding alternatives to, you know, benzodiazepines or sedative hypnotics to help bring down the dose of the Klonopin. And then the psychopharmacologist is working on a Klonopin taper and utilizing non-addictive medications to try to bring that addictive medication down. And they're all working in conjunction with the therapist who's looking for some of the underlying psychological conditioning that person has. And the existential person is working with them on where they are in life and giving them more purpose and passion and meaning and trying to find their identity in this new space that they're in. So it's really cool to watch people move from a state of crisis to a state of stabilization to a state of emotional growth. And by the time they leave, they have a much, much better sense of who they are. You know, it's impossible to completely transform somebody 100% by the time they get out. But we can give them all the tools, and you see amazing transformations by the time that people leave here.
I just wish, you know, as a fellow physician, I just wish our medical care system with regard to how medical practitioners are actually trained really incorporated more of this, because I think what we have is a fairly traditional Western style medical paradigm that we follow. But what you're saying is it's got to be an integrative approach, needless to say, and one that really brings to the fore resources that many people don't use. For instance, I use acupuncture all the time. I have a fantastic acupuncturist I refer to for lumbar pain, for back pain, because we now have hardcore science that's evidence-based showing that this is probably one of the most effective ways to be able to treat that without any pills whatsoever. And I think one of the things that helped, and I was the first senior research fellow in the Office of Alternative Medicine at the NIH, what really helped was when I came on board, we started developing, you know, a real strong foundation for understanding the science behind this and therefore getting a buy-in on the part of more and more practitioners and hopefully medical schools and nursing schools and just schools in general out there to be able to embrace so many of these different resources. you're a pioneer, Reef, because you've established this center and you really put this forth for your patients and clients and people who come in, you know, seeking help. And I can see this as a wonderful model for a lot of other practitioners taking the same challenge on.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, I credit my mom because I have a nice...
Oh, we all credit our moms. It always gets down to the mom thing, doesn't it?
It does, but my mom forced me to meditate when I was 5. And
no way. Come on now. What kind of meditation did you do?
I was raised Sufi, so there's this kind of almost very Eastern methodology to doing a mantra-based focus. And my mom would, you know, she'd bribe me and my brother with chocolate, with candy, with, you know, cake, with
would it work for me?
Yeah, and I was really into ping pong, and so she would let me play longer ping pong hours if I just meditated. So
give me the chocolate.
Yeah, well, you know, the best thing is playing ping pong while you're stuffing a Hershey's bar in your mouth. But
now we're talking.
I got used to handling emotional stressors through non-medicative means, as a person, as an Indian man in America with apparently instant spiritual street cred, because when you're Indian here, people automatically think you're really good at yoga and you have this like great Eastern philosophy and you can fix everybody's computers. I'm like the
in least, that order.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like the least tech savvy Indian person you're ever going to find, but I do have that Eastern philosophy. And so what I did is, being a medical physician and a neuroscientist, and then being able to start a center, being fortunate enough to start a center and saying, I want to do things differently. Just because there's a Buddha in a rehab does not mean they practice spiritual therapy. Just because, you know, that you throw pills at somebody does not mean you're a really good pharmacologist or psychopharmacologist. I wanted an integrative program that was based on a philosophy of true integrative care, where we move people from a state of crisis to a state of emotional growth. And most rehab centers on the substance abuse side and mental health centers will take people out of their crisis by giving them meds or giving them a bunch of group therapy, and then they will send them on their way. And I was like, God, but the main reason these people relapse on the substance side, the main reason they fall prey to their psychiatric condition or diagnosis on the mental health side, is because they didn't do the emotional growth work. You just got them stable, but you didn't do anything to help them build their identity or their sense of purpose, or, you know, who they are in the world, or what their sense of existential meaning is, or you know, what they should be doing on a daily basis, where their hope is coming from. And a lot of that is spiritually focused, but I almost feel it's practical meets spiritual in regards to self-help. It's like the science of self-help. And I feel like that piece is really missing in our modern-day, westernized medical care.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. So, everyone out there, we've been talking to Dr. Reef Kareem, or Dr. Reef, as we love to call him. And his website is Dr. Reef, and that's DOCTOR Reef, REEF.com. Also, learn about his work at the Lumion Center, LUM as in Mary, ION as in Nancy, Center.com. Really important to understand that we have an incredible resource in Dr. Reef out there. He is a pioneer in this field, and it's been really important to understand what American pain really is about, to understand that we're popping pills to numb ourselves, and that one of the most powerful pieces of information Dr. Reef shared with us is the fact that he helps people focus less on external validation and more on building their internal sense of self, including identity, purpose, and self-expression. So you ask yourself, hey, where am I on that grid? Dr. Reef, we really thank you for being on the Her podcast and look forward to many more shows with you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here, and I'm working very hard both at the Lumion Center trying to heal people here and out in the public with speaking events that you can see on the website, drreeves.com, doctor spelled out. And I have an online talk show that I hope will help a lot of people, give them a lot of information. It's called Reef Madness. And it's on YouTube right now and on the website, drreeves.com. But it's like what Jon Stewart was for politics. But this is for human behavior and health. It's a comedic, smart talk show on healing and health, but done with comics and experts and celebrities. It's pretty cool.
Well, thank you for providing just a boatload of ways to be able to access your wisdom, expertise, and, well, a lot of wit, too. Thanks so much. So everyone out there, remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please just take a few seconds and rate this podcast on iTunes, because we want to attract more people just like you to the show. And that happens when you take the time to do it and leave us a review as well, because I sit around reading these things. Love it, and love it more. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD, and you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Hey, thanks for listening, and stay well.